When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Elliot from Kent, and you're listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, aside from necessities, what is one thing you couldn't go a day without? Okay, here comes the show, and remember, question everything.
Please give a warm welcome to Dane Baptiste of Dane Baptiste Questions Everything!
Thank you very much, everybody, and hello, welcome to this live recording from the London Podcast Festival of Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dane Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer.
Hello!
And a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we are talking everything from...
Well, Dane, we're talking everything from Elliot from Kent's question. Aside from necessities, what one thing could you not go a day without? You got a minute, Dane.
It's a good one. I'd say...
Tough one. Coke Zero at the moment for me. Coke Zero. Very niche.
Cool. Which is basically Diet Coke for men insecure about their masculinity.
Yeah.
True story. Basically, that Coke were too worried that if men tried to drink Diet Coke, they would see it as too effeminate. So they created Coke Zero so men could feel more manly while drinking it.
Yep.
Personally, I think if you buy a Coke without sugar in it, your masculinity is the least of your freaking worries. But that's another conversation for another
time. Coke Zero, everybody loves Raymond. A big fan of that. chocolate and my wife.
That's cool.
Those are four things I can't really...
That's nice. All right. I think I would say, love, a day without not feeling loved or being able to display that love to another sentient being. A day without learning is pretty much a day wasted, I guess. And my mum calls me every day. So if she didn't, I'd be like, oh my God, what's wrong? So I'd say those probably are the main things.
Yeah. Good answer. Well, there you go.
Not including necessities.
There you go, Elliot. I hope that answers your question. And suffice to say, on this podcast, we ask and answer all the questions, don't we, Dave?
Absolutely. No question is too big, too small, and no question is too unnecessary, or no question that doesn't necessitate a response. And if you do like the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify, and you'll never miss an episode. Or you can subscribe to us on Acast, the world's biggest podcast network, where you can hear all of the very special questions being asked or answered by a very special guest. Or you can be with us live at the London Podcast Festival. That is wonderful women, people. Give yourselves a round of applause. Because with that being said, on today's show is a Welsh Zimbabwean ex-BBC broadcast journalist specialising in podcast production and documentary making. She has presented and produced two documentaries for the BBC, Brixton Flames on the Frontline and Zimbabwe, Grandfather and Me, which was nominated for a BAFTA. She also launched the BBC's first daily news podcast, Beyond... Today and produced.
I missed the Y on today.
Sure, apologies, mate. Weird acronym. So she launched the BBC's first daily news podcast, Beyond Today, and produced the award-winning newscast, Americast, and launched BBC Radio 1 Extras, If You Don't Know Podcasts. She's one of the co-founders of the Black Swimming Association, the BSA, a charity set up to encourage more people in African, Caribbean, and Asian communities to engage in water safety, education, and swimming. Wow. She is a trailblazer, but an amphibious one, and it is very much our pleasure to welcome to the show Ms. Saren Jones.
Hello.
Thank you guys so much.
Pleasure.
Welcome.
Thank you for being our guest. So first of all, Saren, what could you not go a day without aside from necessities is what we all want to know.
Yep.
What could I not go a day without, aside from necessities? It's going to sound really basic. Mm-hmm. Probably my Fenty lip gloss that I'm wearing right now.
Yeah, that's pretty basic.
Some people are like, that makes sense.
It's so basic, but I think since the pandemic and I didn't make an effort for 2 years, now all of a sudden I can actually try and look nice for myself. Fenty's there for the girls.
There you go.
What about this lovely audience? What could you not live a day without? Just shout it out. Unless it's really offensive, in which case, don't. A lady with the floral top who doesn't look like she wants us to ask her the question. Just a day without being asked these questions live in an audience, I guess. Okay. Gentleman with grey t-shirt. We've got to get someone to say something. Otherwise, this is pointless, isn't it, Dave?
Well, not necessarily pointless. Yeah. It's a very important existential question, so people might need a little bit more time to think about it. Coffee.
You won. Well done. You get the prize. Here's the podcast mug for you.
Unfortunately, the mug contains no coffee, so yeah, I hope you've had your
problem.
You're fixed today. Otherwise, you are in trouble. My goodness. So, Saren, have you had a good week? Which is not the main question we're asking, but we want to make sure that you are of habeas corpus and sound mind and body, relatively.
Yeah, I think I've had a good week, thanks. It's been a bit of a wild one, but overall, yes, it's been a good week. Can't complain too much.
Any major events this week?
I can't believe Hal would have thrown that hot potato.
It's a bit of a quiet one, news-wise. It's probably time for a question, isn't it, Dane? As the format of this show dictates, there's a format you're going to be happy to hear.
Absolutely. So, Saren, as our very esteemed guest, we would like to invite you to ask the first question, which can be any question you would like, even if it is related to the composition of your lip gloss. We will discuss that. Question you'd like, and we'd like to discuss it for about 15 minutes and some change. Then my producer friend, Howard Cohen, would like to pose a question to you, and we'd like to do the same. Then, in a revolutionary act, I'd also like to pose you a question, which we've discussed for 15 minutes. And then, we would like to have the floor open so that these wonderful people can also ask you and us a question. Yeah. It can be any question. And we can discuss it as a very small community. Yeah. How does that
sound? Start thinking now. Start thinking. But also listen to the show. But, I mean, you know.
And if anyone feels self-conscious about asking questions at this point, I would like to remind you all that the Prime Minister's priorities include cheese.
So, yeah, no pressure, Sarah.
So, there is no pressure if that greases the wheels. So,
okay, so no cheese in my question because I'm lactose intolerant anyway.
Me so too. Like, so there you go. You're in good company.
So nice for Dane to meet one of his people.
Exactly.
It's a tough life.
The chosen people.
Okay, so my question. So, it's a bit existential, but it's been burning in my mind, I'd say, for like probably most of this year. have literally, I feel as though we're kind of on the other side of the pandemic or panoramic or whatever people are calling it now. And it's just been a time where I've just had like a flood of different like questions. I've been trying to figure things out, coming out of things and professionally, personally, a lot of confusion. And now that we're kind of back to normality, kind of as it were, just about back in 2019, the question that I have today is like, how do we know that we're doing life right?
How do you know you're dealing?
We're doing life right.
Is
that personally or just collectively as people?
Either, whatever comes to mind.
Man.
I think both overlap, whether we're thinking kind of as a community, collectively or personally.
I mean, my instant reaction is I'm just depressed thinking about how many things I've got wrong in my life. Like, there's quite a long list of times. I mean, that's one of the hard things about that question, isn't it? You're never going to get it all right, are you? Well, have you got it all right, Saren? Because if you have,
Well, I definitely don't have it all right. I think I'm going through this thing where, like, I think, obviously, like, everybody, we went into the pandemic a certain age. You come out two, 3 years older, and you're just like, well, shit. Yeah. like, now what? And you have all these kind of, like, external pressures and expectations that are being put on you, especially as a young woman, to do with your career, to do with your body, to do with families, where you want to go in life, how much time you have, and I guess that's where like a lot of these kind of burning questions are coming from. And the more I speak to people in their 20s, actually, I realize, okay, I'm not actually by myself. This is like a concern that a lot of people, late 20s, early 30s, most definitely is kind of sharing.
So. Yeah, I think it's definitely a valid question, especially because the pandemic for many people had their lives put on hold. And for some people, it was quite a pivotal time in their lives. So some people may have been transitioning from their 20s to their 30s. Some people may have even been starting new jobs. I know especially people that were in the creative industry obviously having that stalled. And you think about like working up towards getting in a position whereby you are trying to realize your creative potential only for the chancellor to be like, you should retrain in another job. Would make you wonder like, what? I'm sure I was doing it right at some point.
Right,
I guess for me,
when I ponder if we're doing things right, and I guess I'd like to think about it collectively because we're a social species. I think this, the saying is, and I'm paraphrasing if I'm getting this wrong, but it's like you can tell about the standard of a society based on how they treat the least or most vulnerable people within that society. Mm-hmm. So if we use that as a reference point, I would say we're not doing great right now. Mm. Yeah, I don't think we're doing great. I think if we look at some of the divisions that we've seen, or it maybe just in terms of the protocols on the and the actions taken by our authoritarians during the pandemic, I would say that wasn't necessarily great. Because one of the observations I made about the pandemic was that, like, COVID itself wasn't necessarily a fatal disease or 100% fatal, but the way that it was dealt with led to a lot more fatalities than there should have been. So, for example, in a country which has had, like, you know, at least three generations post-war having a universal health service, you would think that an infrastructure would have been put in place or a contingency plan would have existed to deal with any kind of epidemic or any kind of pandemic. But as you saw, those plans weren't really there, and our nurses and medical professionals had to use bin liners as PPE. And then when people were given funding for PPE, that funding went to people who made sweets for a living, which was a bit of an issue. And then, like, when you consider, like, moving forward, you know, our departure from the EU was also supposed to bode positively, at least for the UK. And I'm sure we're all aware now that they're tipping raw sewage into our waters. And I'm not that much of an ecological expert, but I know if you tip shit in water, things aren't going great. Mm. Mm. Especially in a developed nation. And I think more than anybody, the idea of people pouring shit in water where people swim doesn't sound great to you.
I mean, it's really not helping my cause.
It really is not helping your cause at all, because speaking as a member of one of the communities you're trying to encourage to swim more often, shit is a deal breaker for me.
Mm-hmm. As it should be for everybody, you know. Everyone's had that experience when you go to a pool and there's a little bit of shit floating in the pool.
Everyone's similar.
And you're like, nah, done.
Everyone's similar, but
can't
you need
you
to understand.
Can you clean shit in a pool?
No, Howard.
The chlorine,
you know what?
Chlorine.
You can clean it, Howard, but we all know it was there. And we can't get past it. Exactly. All right? You've stepped in shit before, right? And then someone will be like, don't worry, your trainer is clean now. But you know it's not clean, really. And you're like, if you got shit on your finger, Howard, and then you cleaned it, and then you were like, does anybody want some crisps?
Yeah,
no one's going to be like, I want some of Howard's crisps. They're going to be like, we saw your finger was Howard. Get away from us with those fucking crisps.
Yeah.
If I see shit in a pool, they can clean it, Howard. But to be honest with you, I would petition to have that place demolished and rebuilt from the ground up.
It's game over.
Yeah,
it's game over, Howard.
It does sound like we've got problems, isn't it? But I hear our cheese is really good, so that's kind of really helping.
We wouldn't know, Howard.
Oh, you're lactose.
That's right. Two-thirds of the panel can't relate to that, Howard, as a barometer. Yeah, exactly. Exactly as you say, sir. But
it's
so I think in that respect, maybe we're not doing great. But then at the same time, I think the fact that we're having such overt conversations about what we perceive to be shortcomings from our superiors might be a positive thing, because it sometimes experiencing this kind of adversity and the collective rebellion against, you know, corrupt government or authorities can maybe be an indication that we are poised to go in a positive direction. Mm. So, you know, an example being that now it's seen as a given, as it should be, and it's a lot more normalized to see women as sports pundits in, like, the Premiership in football and stuff.
Yeah.
I have a nephew and he's 15 years old, and I kind of asked him about, like, how he felt about it. Not so much because I have objected to it, but I just wanted to get his viewpoint because I think it's important to check in. And it doesn't even register that it's any kind of divergent or any kind of non-conventional practice. And for me, that shows it's very progressive, because I think there would be a lot more gender normative roles and gender norms that we had in society that we would adhere to, and we'd hear conversations about, like, what toys kids should have and what clothing and toys are made gender specific. And as far as I'm aware, my nephew is a cisgender heterosexual man, but yeah, he's never objected or raised any kind of concerns about that kind of thing. So I think that's indicative of us moving forward very positively.
Yeah.
And even when we discuss things like gender norms and gender politics, younger generations, or Generation Z or Z, depending on where you're from. That's for you, Harvard. there doesn't seem to be any kind of pushback from them, and it's very normalized. And for me, that's very encouraging that, you know, we are welcoming historically marginalized groups and they are becoming a part of mainstream culture. And however we may feel about it, the generations that are going to be coexisting alongside themselves don't have a problem. So maybe in that respect, we're doing okay. And it might be, or it might be because we're doing so badly, successive generations are being like, they're not doing it properly. So we're going to do something different.
I can't lie. I think there is an element of truth to that.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I mean, no offense to older generations, but it's just like, how did we get here?
It's older generations. How did we get here?
So you know, it's, I think it's just a time where like, a lot of people my age are just like, despite being probably the most educated generation that we have at the moment, more of us go to uni than ever before and are going to university. And we are getting paid more than our parents ever got paid at this age. But we really just can't do that much with what we have right now. Like, money is not stretching. Mm-hmm. We cannot get on the property ladder, especially in this city, which is where a lot of us want to live because this is where the opportunities lie, or at least they did.
The economic center of the country, yeah.
So it's unfortunate that I feel as though there are a lot of people who are kind of in this kind of lull, really, and don't know if all of that hard work, all of that grinding, all of that dedication and time aside and time spent working and studying and doing everything we were meant to do on this checklist,
it's going to pay off.
Yeah.
Like, it paid off for me, just to let you know, everyone. It really
No, but that's great to know.
Yeah.
Because
my answer to your question is, yeah, I'm doing life right. Yeah. Absolutely smashing it. I can talk you through it if you want the details.
It's probably because you can eat cheese. That's why I think you can do life right.
It's interesting how un-cheese-based my success is, really. But I wake up in the morning. I watch Toy Story with my son. He Amazing. Likes me. So right. I'm already quite a long way
Winning.
Along. We think so. Anyway, he can't really talk, but he seems to want to come into my bed. And then I cycle him to nursery to get my exercise, you know. I do my job. I like my job. Dane knows I like my job. I get to come up with ideas for TV and stuff. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I eat my lunch. It's usually healthy. I go home to my wife. She likes me. I watch Everybody Loves Raymond. It's a good show.
Your family like you, Howard, but I'm not sure how more patient this audience will remain. Going through this daily itinerary of banality.
Quite good to see. It's just, occasionally I'll smoke a joint and that's about it, really. It's all fine. It's really not much wrong with it. So I'm kind of, yeah.
Is a lot of that, do you think, as well? Because
I don't even care what I wear clothes-wise. You can maybe be able to tell that. I don't know. I don't care about these things. It's all quite enjoyable. I look forward to the next Marvel film whenever that comes.
See, Howard, now the question is, are you doing life right? Because on the Marvel point, my only concern is that, you know, is there a concern by introducing our children to the various different parts of the Disney portfolio, we're robbing them of an imagination?
Yeah.
Like, quick aside, I'm just saying, guys, Disney now have Marvel, all the old Disney stuff, all the Pixar stuff. They got Lucasfilm as well. They've got Fox, so they show The Simpsons on there.
There's a lot on that.
And there's also the Stars Network. They also own Discovery. So I'm just saying, the fact that we have so much intellectual property in one centralized place for a son watching his father who produces and creates growing up might not be giving him a lot of wiggle room. Not that you're doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
Playing devil's advocate.
Thanks,
here,
mate.
Of course.
Yeah, no.
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Soon to be on Disney Plus.
Yeah, hopefully this podcast ends up on Disney Plus is the plan. But no, I genuinely... And I'll tell you how I know that I'm doing it right.
Yeah, go on.
Little thing. I definitely knew when I was doing it wrong. That would be my thing. Like, you know those days where you're like... and it could be like on like quite superficial levels, like when I was, you know, dating or struggling to date or just, you know, dead inside from dating, you know, like, you know, or work or whatever, anything. Like, no, you know, you kind of, yeah, I genuinely, even know, like, the bloke wakes me up at 5:30 in the morning. What kind of sicko is waking up at 5:30? But, you know,
someone that believes that they should seize the day, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
And that you should,
but
too.
I just think to myself, you know what, if I can tolerate that, yeah, it's, you know, I remember when it wasn't good. So, yeah, I reckon I'm doing life right. Sorry about that. It's probably quite annoying to hear.
On that point, Saren, was there a particular juncture recently where you were like, I really think I'm doing this wrong, or there's a better way I could do it? That's kind of also been part of prompting this question.
Not questioning if I'm doing it wrong, but questioning if, like, is this the best that it's going to be? You know, when you just, like, wake up and the grind happens again, and you're like, so is this... Because my pension says I'm going to retire in 2068. Like, am I doing this until 2068?
That's
like, is this
see.
Literally...
Which is Exactly. But that is, it's the right question to ask. And hopefully not being too patronizing, as somebody who is now in the beginning of their midlife, I remember asking myself these questions as well. Mm. And part of that was the impetus for me to change my career and begin a career in comedy and then moving into more creative fields. And so that was the kind of push I needed.
Yeah.
But I'd also say in terms of the factors is that you should, I hope it's also a consolation to you, that you're sitting at the cusp of a very new part of history, not just as extensively, but it's even looking at in this country. Yeah. Like, there are a number of old institutions in this country that have existed that are now kind of in the process of changing significantly. So, for example, I would argue we're at a point now where bipartisan politics aren't as clear as they used to be before. I think before, people had a much greater understanding of what the ideology meant if you said you were right wing or left wing. Those are not as clear as they used to be anymore. Some could argue that all of these sit under the umbrella of corporatism, or that they have now all become obsolete in the face of populism. I'd also say as well, like Howard mentioned, going to work. Mm. Going to work is very different, will be very different at a certain point for our successive generations, because we're in a time now where a number of the jobs, and we all know that people's occupations play a large part in making up who they are. A lot of the jobs that people have are not going to exist in like the next 10 to 30, 20 years, which means having your occupation define who you are. And just so you know how far this goes, most surnames come from nominative determinism. Like, people's names would be like Smith because their family would be Smiths, or you'd be Baker because your family were Bakers. That's how much your occupation determines your being. But nowadays, like, the more we have the rise and proliferation of AI, it means that that's not going to be able to define who you are. So it means we're, as a species, have to work out something else to define our humanity by, other than how we work. Right. So that's changed as well.
I'm not looking forward to when people's surnames are influencer.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. But even
impending doom.
Even the nature of work as well, because now, like, a lot of stuff you had to leave your house for, you don't necessarily have to do. So even though you talk about living in London because it's a melting pot, it's cosmopolitan, nowadays you can have a job where your offices are based in London, but you can do that job from a different country.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Again, it's changed geographically what it means to be a part of a country and to identify nationally as well. So I think one of the reasons why you're maybe asking why we're doing it right is because I think we're at a point where it's all about to change. Like, there's a lot of systems in terms of like consumption and capitalism that were relevant post-war, but even things like monarchy, as we've all learned, doesn't last forever.
No.
So now we have to think of new ways to define ourselves. So
it was a great question. So you're doing something right, Sarah. And let's hear it for Sarah's question, everyone.
Yeah, it's a great question. You're doing fine.
Can I come back on in like 5 years and like see how I'm doing?
Come back in 5 years. Thank you for thinking that we're going to live another 5 years, Sarah.
We'll be back after this.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to the show.
Right, what
my question, right, okay. Tell them, well, and then listeners, you... sport, right? You can, you're proper, you're like real.
I love sport. I was really lucky growing up that my parents just kind of let me and my sisters kind of do as many different things as possible, right, and gave us the autonomy to choose what we loved out of those sports. Yeah. So sports, we had books thrown at us, we had instruments thrown at us, and then we just got to pick.
But you swam pretty like hardcore, right?
Yeah, so swimming became my sport. That was the thing I picked, which I don't, to this day, doesn't really make sense why I picked it, because actually wasn't very good. Well, but I'm very competitive and I don't like, I
you
don't
got,
not like
You got
being
quite
good
far, didn't you? You didn't get quite, you mentioned to me before, you didn't get, you know, you were close to the Olympics, but you were like, you know,
yeah, never made it pro, never made it to the Olympics. But I was really fortunate to have my dad, who always encouraged me from a young age that like making that standard like isn't the end all be all. So I ended up actually going to America and getting a scholarship.
Oh wow! So I mean, to me, that's amazing. And I think, like, you know, well, yeah, like anyone who can pursue something like that is amazing. But it did make me think back to like when I was doing sport at school. And so my question, and I'm definitely, we should throw this out to the audience a little bit, is what were the good and bad things about doing sport at school? I mean, obviously the answer to both could just be bench football, if anyone remembers that, but maybe nobody remembers bench.
I liked bench football.
Yeah, but equally it was awful because I had to do it every week. And it was basically just, instead of goals, just benches.
Is everyone familiar with bench football here?
Yeah.
All right, basically you have your normal kind of PE bench.
Oh, it was
awful.
You
kind of turn it this way. And so it's like, looks like it has like a very low face. And then depending on how you play it, you might have pick numbers. So let's say this was like 1 to 10 here, and this is 1 to 10 here. Then the teacher will be like 2. And if you're 2 on this side and 2 on this side, you both have to kind of run around,
get the ball,
the circuit of the pit of the gym, and then get the ball. And the first person to score a goal wins.
It was fun for the first 78
depending
times.
Depending on the, you know. It's fun depending on how many times you do it, and B, how clean your PE room is, because normally it's a barefoot job. And yeah,
you must have loved sport at school, right? And you know, everyone else must have hated you a little bit.
So everyone hated me because I loved sport. That is very true.
You were really good, right? You were really good.
Well, swimming is one of those sports where if you can swim, it gives you such a fantastic aerobic base that you can pretty much do everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, your hand-eye coordination is a bit off on land, but you've got the stamina to like run for a long time. Yeah, sport in school was mad because there was the expectation to do everything, which you would do.
South London?
No, so I'm from Cardiff originally.
Oh, of course.
And all of my like childhood memories of being outdoors in Cardiff are like torrential rain. I'm not even exaggerating. And like my...
That makes swimming make more sense. Yeah, like,
you know what?
Can't get no wetter. So.
Yeah, literally. And we're like indoor sports. So like at least I'm deliberately trying to get wet here.
Exactly.
But I have memories of like my PE teacher, like in winter when it was like hailing down outside with the biggest puffer jacket ever, hood up, being like, come on girls, it's not cold. And we would all be in like small shorts and t-shirts.
Did your PE teacher work at Haberdasher's Us previously before moving to Cardiff? Because that sounds just like Mr. Grantham Hill.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he'd have a puffer jacket and be like, it's not cold, is a state of mind.
Oh.
And I'd be like, that thermometer says different.
Yeah. No.
So
it was freezing. I mean, wherever you did PE, it was freezing, right? God, I hated it so passionately.
Anyone do PE in a temperate or warm climate? It and enjoy it.
Literally just shaky people just shaking their heads at us listening.
That's it. That's
well, I think PE at school, like unfortunately when I was at school, like they really didn't make exercising appealing or fun or engaging. It was just a chore. And so many of the girls who I was at school with did not want to take part in sport because it was so binary. It was boys do football and rugby.
Yep.
Girls do hockey and netball. That is it. You know, there was no kind of overlap. There were no kind of other sports that you could kind of tap into or explore.
See, I went to an all-boys school, and so all we had was sport, really. There's nothing, you know, no women to chase.
Was it all football?
Well, we did football and rugby, and the rugby was awful. I mean, they didn't train us at all.
Because you went to a comprehensive.
I went to a grammar school.
It was a grammar school.
I got in the last day before. Yeah, I know. You wouldn't think it, but yeah, it was in Ilford, so I wouldn't think too highly of it.
Who wouldn't think it?
Yeah. But I got in on the last day. I was just literally going to the comprehensive, and then they called me and said, oh, someone's dropped out, so you're next on the list.
And you were like, fuck this public school.
It's actually my dad that made me do it. I was going to go to the other school, and he said, you've got to take these opportunities, son.
My mum did the same. Yeah. I went to a parents' evening on open day at my grammar school, and she saw a tall Ghanaian gentleman, and he was wearing a cloak. And she was like, do all prefects get cloaks? And she was like, he was like, yes, madam, they do. And she was like, you're definitely going here.
The boredom of the PE. I mean, you would think being a PE teacher is like a good job, isn't it? Because, like, it's sport. Like, people love sport, you know, generally. Otherwise, why are you doing this job? And
yeah, but those who can do and those who can't teach. And I think athletics is probably one of the epitomes of that.
Well, the thing is, sports, I grew up in Southeast London, and sports is a very different thing. Because I guess part of that's coming from a community whereby you are so used to a transgenerational marginalization from academia that a lot of young Caribbean men shy away from that. And really, one of the ways you're able to assert both your masculinity, especially in a boys' school, and, you know, show you have some aptitude within an educational institution is being good at sports.
It's a very good point.
I go so far as to say a lot of the time, sports was a shortcut to popularity. A lot more
definitely.
Than, like, no one's ever like, you're good at maths, can we be friends?
But you know it's what, though? But that is so true for boys, but not for girls.
Yeah,
like, you did not want to be the girl who was good at sports, because you were muscular, or you were a show-off because you maybe could beat some of the boys.
Sarah, you can say lesbian on this podcast too.
I mean, back in the day, you know, kids would make assumptions.
Yeah, they'd make assumptions, like,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it very...
all going to change now, partly in
that's all it took. I got into school in the 90s
exactly.
where all it took, like, a girl could do a header on a ball and they'd be like, look at that lesbian. Yeah. That's butch, look at her. Oh man,
it was so. I used to really I was not gifted at sport, you know, but I tried. So I managed to get into the football team.
Sometimes that makes it worse. You can't do it, Howard, move!
I got into the football team in year 8 and we won the league, you know. Nice. I was the right back. But the problem I had, and I don't know if anyone else had this experience, but, you know, I needed glasses, right? And so, you know, the issue was I couldn't get the contacts in my eyes. I was told that my eyes were too flat.
And I couldn't. Are you serious?
Yeah, I've never been able to get contact. How has this taken 180 episodes to get to? My eyes were too flat, and I had to either wear glasses as I played or not wear glasses. So as a right back in a football team, it's actually quite easy to not be able to see when you're playing, because there's just the person that's going to try and take the ball past you, and you just stop them in physically, basically.
At a particular level, I will say, Howard. I'll also say, of all of the stories of football dreams that I've heard, that is by far my favourite. We can all relate to someone who's told us a story like, I could have played football professionally, but my eyes are too flat. Is the best one I've ever heard, I must say. I go with that
one. But then they put me in goal, you see, because the goalkeeper didn't want to play in goal anymore.
But you couldn't see.
And I couldn't see, so it was just a complete disaster.
And that's why you never played for Arsenal.
I did finish fourth in the 200 metres, which nobody cares about. But, you know, those moments of positivity in amongst all of that horror that goes on in those lessons, where you're just like, oh God, how many times am I going to have to run around the fucking school? Like, it's just, it was just awful, like, those times.
Yeah, I understand. I think it depends. I think sports policies might vary from school to school. I'd heard somebody mistakenly, someone a lot older, I guess, than you, Saren, said that the Welsh Sports Council for School had assessed a lot of kids to work out, like, maybe by their physiology, what sports they'd be good at. And I actually think, and someone can correct me on this, but I think that's quite a common practice in China, where they will look at kids and their physiology, and they can actually assign them sports. And
didn't happen at my school.
Very early on in life, they'll put kids in particular sports where they think they might show a potential. And I'm not necessarily saying that that's what people can do, because, you know, your tastes or what you might, your interests might change over time. But I think it's very strange in this country how little is invested in making sports available to everyone. And I think there's a element of elitism with that. I think if you go to the right school, you're in the right circles, then these opportunities can come to you. Because when I meet people and they're like, I do rowing, I'm like, what the fuck did you learn to row?
Yeah.
Because I think, depending on where you are placed in your socioeconomic group, it allows you to have the opportunity to have what I call regular sports and equipment sports.
Yeah.
Because they're the difference. And the big difference mainly is the sports that appear in the Olympics are equipment sports, and the stuff that you do in the park with your friends in school shoes are not those ones. And I say that because, like, even though you may have an interest, like, say someone wants to be a triathlete and that involves maybe shooting or skiing, those accoutrements to that sport are not cheap, which means you aren't able to necessarily participate. And so it's not and that problem means it's not
tennis is a big one there, right?
Meritocratic. Yeah, well,
tennis is a big one.
All the equipment sports, anything you have to kind of
tennis
buy.
Tennis is one where you would think, because there's so many courts, you know, you could go to any park in England, I imagine, and somewhere in a region you'll find a tennis court for a lot, certainly in London, I can't. But, like, but you need quite a lot.
Yeah, you need it. Well,
even
it's
the
an interesting point,
because,
as Saren said, the opportunity to live in a place with an abundance of spaces for sports with tennis courts, like in London, is being reduced all the time, because not everyone's able to live in London. And I think you can, most people can see there is, like, a class-based divide when it comes to certain sports, because football's definitely seen as, like, a working-class sport, whereas rugby is definitely a middle class one, because I went to a grammar school in inner city South East London, and as far as I know, I didn't know any other school that played rugby union around that area.
See, that's so fascinating, because in Wales it's flipped.
Yeah.
Because the Valleys has a huge influence on rugby back home. So, like, rugby is very much working class. Like, rugby is in your blood. If you don't play rugby, you're weird. If you play football, okay, we had that fluke in 2016. Now we're going to the World Cup. Probably another fluke, but we're here for it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very, yeah, sports is a huge kind of indicator of, like, where we sit in terms of class.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons for that is because it still allows for there to be a divide. Because in the States, which is a republic, your prowess in athletics can open you up to new opportunities you wouldn't be able to exploit if you are from a more modest background. So there are some athletes, for example, who play college basketball. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean it's going to precipitate into a professional career, but if you show that skill, you're able to get a scholarship and you can earn a degree to specialize or major in a field that's relevant to you. And I've always found it very strange that we don't have that here, because for all of the young... and this is just the men, this doesn't even include young women, but for young men playing football or aspiring to be professional footballers in the UK, 0.03% of them will make it as professionals. Yeah. And that means you've got that remaining 99%+ who are basically left by the wayside, where they could, you know, maybe translate that into another sport that's cardio intensive. They could maybe become runners and athletes, or just go to play football on a scholarship at a British university or abroad and learn about a new culture, as well as having the resources to maybe have another field of study.
I mean, I went to study in America, but it wasn't a scholarship for sport.
Yeah, but and it's strange that, especially in a society which emphasizes survival of the fittest and natural selection, if people do show an ability to, you know, complete particularly human feats like being superior athletes and running very fast, that we don't have enough resources that are used to curate and nurture those gifts, particularly from people with more modest backgrounds.
Yeah. Well, that was my question. What do you think, Dave? Was it good?
It was good, but I'm not the audience, Howard. These are the people who are here.
I want to make sure we get some time to answer their own questions.
It's a good question. You know what? It's a good question. I didn't get to mention this, but I always find it strange, because nowadays, you know, like, how many people here that are like working, how much is like trying to find a cost-effective gym a part of your life? And you're like, I want to go to the gym, and then someone's like, it's going to cost you £55. You're like, why? Because we do smoothies. That's not serious. And then even if you do join the gym, then you got to buy a yoga mat, then, you know, spin class. I mean, so it's a shame that we have all this opportunity at school. That should probably be the best time, when we have the vitality and the time, to look at different sports or any kind of kinesthetic activity.
Yeah.
And we don't get to exploit that for other reasons. And then you get to an age now where you don't have the same amount of time, and you got to go to the gym and ride on a bike that doesn't go anywhere, and then or buy a Peloton. So,
well, Dane, you've heard my question, you've heard Sarian's question. What is your question today?
Well, the question relates, and it's in terms of like issues of class and sports. So, Sarian, you're a swimmer who has had the Olympic trials. Not one to toot my own horn, but I also did silver survival. That's beyond a pajama and a brick. All right? But this is new levels. There's two bricks. And like a suit. It wasn't a suit, but yeah. But my greatest surprise doing swimming as an activity is the reaction that I used to get from people when I told them I could swim. So I would be in Ayia Napa. Don't judge. And there'd be a pool, and people would be like, Dane, can you swim underwater? And I'd be like, of course, the whole way. Yes. They'd be like, really? And I remember Freshers Week at university, friends are swimming, they're like, Dane, can you swim? And I'd be like, of course I can swim. They'd be like, seriously? And I'd be like, yes, seriously. And I'd be like, why do you even ask that? And their response would be, I didn't know black people could swim. And to the point where this is also somewhat of a trope, even within comedy, particularly when I play predominantly black films, where people are like, black people don't swim, you know, we don't go in that water. And I'd be like, I go in that water sometimes. Especially if they've got goggles, I go in the water, what's the deal here? But it seems that there is a very large, I would argue, potentially global misconception that black people do not swim. And I object to this, A, because you're here, B, because I did silver survival, that was two bricks. And very recently, maybe about 5 years ago, Simone Manuel
was a gold medalist at the Olympics.
First black woman to win a gold medal at the Olympics.
So not only are we swimming, we're excelling. Mm-hmm. Unless she's the one that beat you to the punch, Seren, so I can't really back her.
You know what? No, I'm a big girl fan, so...
Okay, cool. So, all right. No, unity, that's the main part. But, yeah. So I guess what I want to know from you, from maybe a historical perspective or from a personal perspective, why do people think black people don't like swimming?
I still find this question so hard to answer because I've been kind of on this quest of like finding a specific like pinpoint for the last 5 years. But there is none. The work that I'm doing at the Black Swimming Association is trying to like figure that out. And the more we dig deeper into the issue, there are just more layers and it gets more complex.
One of the reasons that upon research, and I kind of speak for the diaspora based in the UK or in mainland continental Europe, but in America, Jim Crow laws and segregation were a large reason as to why like a lot of black people didn't swim. And I'm not sure if you guys are aware of this, but with Jim Crow laws, this is segregation, which meant African Americans would not be allowed to be in certain public places unless they were sent for them. And one of those being public swimming pools, because obviously everyone's sharing a pool, people would eject so much that there's even the iconic photo of a swimming pool owner pouring acid into a pool because people were mixing in the pool as if like this comes off. Which was said to me the first time I went to Turkey, by the way. I was outside the pool and the waiter said, "Please, why are you not going in the water? It wash off." True story. Now, don't worry, my racism radar was on. And I said to myself, that's come from a place of maybe lack of awareness rather than malice. Because he also was like giving me a drink at the same time. And I feel like people that hate you don't bring you drinks to your sunbed. Unless it's all inclusive and they have to. But anyway, I digress. So obviously, in that instance, institutional racism has been a reason why people have been adverse to swimming. Now, obviously, I learned to swim in the UK and I didn't really experience any nuanced racism regarding swimming, apart from the fact that no one knew the name Dane for some reason. Mm. So there'd just be a bunch of my white colleagues being like, "You can do it, Dwayne." And my mum would be like, "Who are they talking to?" But you probably have more information about those experiences than I do. So,
yeah, it's interesting. If we're speaking about kind of the diaspora in this case, a lot of kind of our parents, our grandparents came over here. Not everybody, but a lot of them did. And when they did, life was significantly harder because their main priority was to assimilate and to work hard and to make something of themselves and to have a better life. Speaking from my mum's perspective, my mum's from Zimbabwe. She moved over in the 70s when she was 12. Education was the thing. Mm. Like my mum and my uncles and my auntie, they had to work hard in school to go to university, to get a good job, to have a better life. Languages was not an option for my mum. Mm-hmm. Sports was not an option for my mum. These two things were not prioritized. Mm-hmm. And when she was able to do sports in school, it was kind of put a pair of trainers on and just run around the school. Kind of as you were saying before, right? It wasn't kind of like the swim lessons that we now see in the curriculum where kids are spending 6 30-minute sessions over 6 weeks in a local ledge center or a pool if the school has that pool. So that is kind of one aspect. There's another aspect of accessibility and finance. So speaking before about kind of class and sports and how expensive certain sports can be. And if you were in school, you go to the private schools and they would like beat your ass in like hockey. And it was like, oh, because they all have their own hockey sticks and they actually train like 3-4 times a week.
I went to a school in Southeast London that was a member of other private schools. And we went there for a rugby sevens tournament and they had two people working at a carvery in their dinner hall.
It's incredible.
I never felt so broke in my life. There was two people, and I don't mean cooks, I mean chefs. And you know the difference, because chefs wear hats, and they're big hats. And they
was
were like
Millfield by any chance?
Oh, it was, I want to say it was either Haberdashers Adams or Elstree. Because Sacha Baron Cohen went to one of them. I didn't see him, but I saw two chefs being like, slice of beef. And me being like, what the f-? I had to fight for a vending machine for 3 years at my school.
It happens. But swimming is one of those very expensive sports. People actually aren't as aware. Mm. Even if we're talking about recreational grassroots stuff, because if you have a kid and they're going to join a football team or a basketball team, really all they need is a pair of trainers, really. Because usually bibs are provided. Obviously, like wearing denim isn't ideal, but you can get away with like wearing clothes. As long as you have trainers, you can run around, right? Yeah. With swimming, you need a costume, you need goggles, you need a hat, you even need a pound for a locker.
You do need a pound for a locker.
That is literally just right at the beginning. And the more you progress in the sport, the more expensive it gets. Mm. So the swimsuits, for example, that when you watch, I don't know if you guys have seen like the Olympics and you see the swimmers in their long suits, those suits cost around £400 to £500 for one suit. Mm. Usually you need about 2 to 3 if you're an elite level. So that's for suits. And then you'll need about 3 pairs of goggles because goggles snap, 3, 4, 5 pairs of hats because hats snap. Mm. Races will cost between £7 and £10 to enter per race. And if you have a coach saying to you, okay, this is a 4-day competition, I want you to race 7 races, 7 times 10 for races only. And then when you kind of advance again and you're going to the British Nationals or the Olympic Trials, which are traditionally in British swimming held in Sheffield, you need to find a way to get to Sheffield. Whether that's train or car, but your parents got to pay for that.
I never thought someone would ever say that to me.
Someone's got to pay for that.
You need to find a way to Sheffield. How about I don't go? There's usually my.
But then
you got to go.
You have
right?
to go. Yeah. But then the final thing is hotels. You have to stay over at these. Mm. But like swimming is obviously a lot of the things I've mentioned exist in other sports. They do.
Yeah.
But when it comes to those suits and when it comes to that kind of dedication of kind of membership as well, because pool hire is expensive for local clubs, they have to make up that money. And usually that's charged.
And also, also an important point is for a lot of other sports, as long as you have the equipment, you can practice at home. Mm-hmm. There is an essential piece of equipment you need to swim at home.
Mm. You can't do that in the bath or the shower.
Not a lot of people have that. Yeah, yeah. Not a lot of people have that. Yeah.
But I've got to ask one thing, because obviously, you know, there's a kind of, is it a myth? Is there, because the absolute kind of, I would go as far to say dominance in like, how many lists of sports do you want me to name of black athletes, right? Is like, I mean, just America alone, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, the England football team.
It's also the first black male tennis player has now made it to the semi-final since 1972. Yeah. Yeah. So come for that as well.
But you know, there is mythology around the physiological differences between.
Oh no, that's biological fact.
So how about do you the explain muscle to fat that, ratio? It's not one or the other, is it?
Well, that's a really interesting one because I don't know where that came from. Like, all I know is my swimming career, I swam for 13 years competitively in the UK and in the US. I only ever came across 5 black girls of my standard. One was my sister, actually. So 4 black girls, right? And there are so many people who were either, I'd met along the way, who were black outside of the sport or white in the sport. And they were like, how are you so fast? Your bones are heavier. How are you doing so well? And it's so strange when this mentality has literally been embedded in you since the beginning to the point where
it's almost like being told you speak so well.
Yeah. and you end up, it just becomes the norm. And then when you meet,
how did you know the difference between a butterfly in the pool and a butterfly dance that's done at carnival?
Yeah.
And other stupid questions.
No idea.
Black people know what I'm talking about. Yeah, all right. Hey, let's make sure. Okay, cool.
But you get to a point where you're like, okay, this is so embedded in our community as well, to the point where I meet, you know, with my charity, we do swimming and water safety courses for people of all ages. Most of the people are aquaphobic who come in, petrified of water, have had a near drowning experience, and just don't want to get in. But we encourage them to get in for life-saving
skills. If you hear the anecdotes for a lot of Caribbean people in terms of how they learn to swim, it's normally you're at visiting family in the Caribbean,
someone
older, just goes, there you go, you'll make it. The story I'm told by most people, just throwing you in by
happens
the wrist.
A lot.
And
happens
also
a lot.
Jaws, like a lot of...
Jaws did not help the cause.
Jaws was probably one of the worst things that happened, because everybody was like, if you're going to go into the water naked at night time, because I would never do that, won't catch me doing it. And that put off a lot of people. That was the shark black people relationship.
Yeah, no, not
was
great.
Permanently destroyed by the franchise Jaws.
Yeah. Well, but I think to conclude this question, it is worth how's what you're doing going? Is it you feel like you're making some progress?
Yeah, it's going really well, thank you. We started the charity March 2020. We didn't know that lockdown was about to happen 2 weeks after we announced the charity. Okay, so that was a bit chaotic.
Sharing water's a bit COVID-y, isn't it?
Yeah, man. We were like, okay, great. So now all the pools are going to close for 2 years. This is fantastic. Mm. But now the pools are open again. We do these water safety classes where we teach people about water safety, how to stay safe around different bodies of water. We're based in Hackney, and Hackney is obviously like canal central. Mm-hmm. People don't think that it's dangerous to walk along the canal, but like most people wouldn't know what to do if they saw somebody in danger or if they themselves got in danger in the water. So we talk about cold water shock. We talk about learning how to float. People don't know whether to call the Coast Guard or the fire brigade. There's a difference depending on which part of the country you're in. We talk about that as well. But through all of this, our participants actually learn how to swim at the end, and that's the most rewarding thing. Like seeing, so actually, for example, this cohort we have is our fifth cohort this year, 65 and overs, and it's my favorite because I get to get in the pool with loads of aunties who haven't swum for the longest time. And Catherine last week was like, I don't want to get in, and she was tearful before getting in, and after the hour she was swimming unassisted, having the best time. And it's just really, really rewarding because I feel like having been fortunate and privileged enough to be a swimmer and to go through the ranks, I felt as though after coming back from America, I was sat on this kind of like treasure trove of knowledge. And, you know, swimming is fantastic. It's good for your mind. It's good for your body. It's a great career pathway that we also don't talk about enough as well. And I felt like I had all of this knowledge, but like people who look like me just did not know or didn't really want to know. So being able to share that and, you know, and seeing how it impacts these women who I'm working with now and how they take these lessons that we have in swimming and apply those things into their daily lives is really rewarding.
I need to apologize. Well done. First of all, definitely a round of applause. Saren, I need to apologize. I very flippantly said during Howard's second question, those who can do and those who can't teach. I'm retracting that statement because we know you can and you are now teaching each one, which we appreciate. So thank you very much. And also thank you very much for being a guest on the podcast. This has been great. I hope you have all enjoyed.
And before we wrap up, we are going to open the floor. Well, not open the floor, but open to the floor for any questions.
If you have a question for Saren or myself or Howard, you can ask.
There's a person going around with a microphone. Come on, put your hands up. I mean, it could be anything. It could be very basic. Well, there's a gentleman here.
Hello.
What's your name, mate?
Mark A.G. Davidson, Self-Esteem Weekly. You, all talking about sports at primary school and being in the right circles and stuff. Did your school have an apparatus? And did you even do the parachute? Because
we did have an apparatus.
It's like some sort of shared hypnosis, really. And it's like, did that even happen?
You did have an apparatus. Some boy kicked me in the face on the apparatus. You've literally just unlocked a weird memory that I had. Yeah, no, uncomfortable. Yeah, but we did.
Why does apparatus always lead to someone recanting some trauma?
It's always a thing.
Because at my apparatus, I was trying to show
that's
my
a many leveled thing.
It's amazing. Yeah, exactly. So my experience was on the rings. I tried to show people that I could go backwards. Landed on my head and was winded for about 3 minutes. And everyone in the class was like, "I think he's broken his spine."
You get an ice pack because everyone has ice packs, regardless of your injury in school. Ice pack.
I think I might have been told to run it off.
Don't worry.
So, but yeah, I think I did a parachute a couple of times, but to be honest, I actually found it to kind of be groupthink. And at some point during my time in primary school, I burst a capillary in my nose. And that sounds harsh, but it meant I could have nosebleeds at will. And so, for example, they'd be like, "Today we're going to watch a film." And I'd be like, "Not me." So it came in very handy.
Interesting. I had no apparatus at my school. We did have a swimming pool, though.
Which
is quite nice. Apart from some questionable, I don't know if we really want to open this up and do a public space, but teachers, questionable when you're swimming. I don't know. Just felt like, it's just not comfortable, but that's probably not
fun. You keep peeling back the layers of surrender trauma. I feel like every time you're just like,
Anyway, fine. That was odd.
That was a good question.
Come on, let's have another question.
That's a question.
I'm just going to pick on people and then you're going to have to make one up on the spot. Oh, no, there's a man at the back.
Hello, my name's Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, this is a bit of a silly question. I feel really bad for Aaron. Dane, I heard you on Just a Minute.
Yes.
I have to ask, was it surreal meeting Paul Merton?
Oh.
What are you trying to say?
Do you know what, Aaron? No, it fucking wasn't. And I'll tell you why. All right?
In a minute.
Basically, I beat Paul Merton on Just a Minute. And then I asked him to do this podcast. And he refused. Ooh. Yeah, because he felt hurt that he lost on Just a Minute, even though he's been doing it 10 years before I was born.
And Paul Merton, if you're listening, this is not you. Okay, we can coexist.
No, Howard, do it again. Be like, this is your conscience, and you should be doing just a minute. But yeah, to answer your question, Aaron, it was initially surreal, but unfortunately, I have to say, sometimes you shouldn't meet your heroes because apparently they don't do podcasts, when very clearly their voice sounds very comfortable.
Come on,
podcast.
Mate. We're both from Barking. That's why we sound the same. Just but, get on with, be on the show.
But that's a great question.
Great
Thank
question.
You very much,
Thank
Aaron.
You very much. Who else have we got? And we're just going to pick on people. It's going to get awkward. So you
I feel like picking on people. Picking on people is the word. Oh, a bad word to use.
Okay, we're gonna just get, select people to be treated to picking a question.
Thank you.
Man in the white
Thank
t-shirt.
Thank you, sir. As prompt, passive aggressively by your lovely partner. Yeah. Say something. Say something. Why are you putting your hand up?
The more pointless, the better in this scenario.
That's right. I'll keep it on sport. Obviously, there's a lot of sport being cancelled over the weekend.
Yes.
Just wanted to know your take on that.
For this weekend?
This weekend specifically.
Howard, you had a point on this?
Well, I kind of feel that, you know, my life as an Arsenal fan is miserable enough that I potentially don't need any more misery.
Howard, it's
this
not
week,
been a bad start.
It's not
so
been
far.
A bad start. Cancelling sport for the Queen being dead, I don't know if she would have really liked that, would she? I think she'd have probably gone, just get on with it. You know, did Arsenal win? Would have been maybe what she said. I don't know. Saren?
It's a tricky one. I think I'm going to say no comment.
She's got more high hopes for her career than me.
I think that in a society which does profess to be a lot more enlightened than a lot of theological ones or ones that are rooted in religion and stuff, I don't really see the point. I don't think it's going to bring her back. I don't think it's going to be that long a distraction from mourning if you are mourning the loss of your queen. So... I guess there's some sentiment behind it, but I think if given the fact that the relationship between monarch and subjects is based on us providing for said monarchs, we should at this point be able to decide collectively what we want to do as well. Because, you know, I pay for that stuff. So if I want to go football as well, I should be able to go football as well.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
I'm not a monarchist. I'm not going to have any schadenfreude or have any, say anything about someone's loss of life. But at the same time, I think in other points of adversity involving the royal family, which we all know about, that didn't stop anything from happening, right? There was no halting of any services then. So why should this be any different?
Good
Mark knows
point.
What I'm talking about.
We're going to do three more questions and nobody can leave until we do. I mean, that seems fair. Maybe. Oh, there's a gentleman, lady here.
Personal question for you, Howard.
Okay, what's your name?
It's Rebecca.
It's Rebecca?
Yes.
I've met Rebecca's. Hello.
Oh, good. I was just wondering if your flat eyes had affected you in any other areas of your life.
That's a great question,
Other
Rebecca.
Than my sporting professions, yeah. So the other way it affected me is that people took the piss a lot. And
I only found out about this today. So don't worry, Rebecca. I've got stuff here. Yeah. I've got a war chest to put together.
But actually, the most interesting element of it would be that is a how many glasses people we got here? We got
statistically, it should be one in three of the people here.
Gentleman there. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, look, if you get it early, if you get your glasses early, I got my glasses at 5 years old. You basically spend a lot of time thinking, oh, I wish I didn't fucking have to wear these glasses. And then, you know, they weren't fashionable. They're more fashionable now. Mate, you've got lovely fashionable glasses. Yeah. I can see them. I've been trying not to stare at them, but, you know, they're really... I'm not going to swap because we haven't got the same prescription.
Is that,
but
those of you that wear glasses, is that what happens sometimes? You'd be in a restaurant, you'd be like, oh, my days, look at those frames over there. I need to meet that person. Do you get, like, compliments on your frame sometimes? People are like, I'm sorry to disturb you, madam, but...
Yeah, those are
every
really
now and again,
nice.
You get,
those
are who really... is your optometrist? Are you mad, Ruby? Yeah. must be nice.
But, you know, I could never get the contact lenses, so I put down the many, many, many years of not having any progress with the opposite sex romantically to still being wearing my glasses. And I would go to nightclubs or parties and my glasses would steam up. That's not attractive. No one's turned on by the guy with his glass. He's cleaning, getting his little square out and cleaning his glasses, you know. So that would be an answer. Thanks, Rebecca.
I think what you should have done, Howard, is going to the nightclub with the contact lenses on. And he walked up to a lady like, girl, you were so good at... popped out my eyes, that's all. And she's like, are you sure you haven't got flat eyes? No, baby, that's you, girl. And
yeah. It was, I'm speaking from Vision Express. 13-year-old Howard Cohen in Vision Express just going like that. Just... can't get him in. Yeah, keep trying. Anyway, two more questions and then I'm going to go home to my wife and children. And so today, no, not to my wife and children. You can do something else. But Two more. Come on. This lady here. Come on. You've got plenty of questions. I can see. Oh, but come on. It can't just be to me.
If you want to direct your questions towards Howard, feel free. It's your time.
Have you considered laser eye surgery? It's very good.
I'm not counting that question. No, I'm now quite content that my personality is based around my glasses, which is a weird thing about being a glasses wearer, right, mate? You know, I mean, like you, it's kind of you, isn't it? It comes to you. So I'm not going to do that.
I had it in January. It's very good.
Is it working well?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
Do you feel like it's a whole new world?
Absolutely. You're not the first person I know who said that.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy? Like, I grew up thinking we'd use lasers to cut people in half on spaceships, and we use them to fix our eyes and burn off hair around bikini areas.
Yeah.
And only the eyes.
We're doing things right, everybody.
We are doing life right.
Yeah, exactly.
Those lasers, but never.
Go on, you got another one. I can see.
Well, I was going to ask a follow-up question for Seren with your BBC insidership. My mum is convinced that everyone the BBC knew in advance that the Queen had died. And I want to know if there's any
clue. Oh, that's a good question. Well, funnily enough, so I was, I have two fantastic housemates who also work at the BBC. Well, one of them does, the other one doesn't anymore. So I was trying to like live through them yesterday. I was like, what's going on? So apparently...
Remember the career. I can do this if you want me to, because I don't have a future.
Apparently, when the public found out, it was actually another time.
Correct.
That's what I'll say.
Yeah, so she went about one. And basically, the phrase is... everyone know the phrase? London Bridge has fallen. And that's where they go and get those DVDs they've had ready.
We've
for
had
quite
them
a while.
Ready for. I can, yeah, I can
still,
say that.
They're still we've DVDs. Had, like, that's, funny, you know, that's how long they've had them for.
I left a year ago, but instantly, my two first thoughts were, thank God I'm not working the news today. And my second thought was, I know exactly what needs to be done today, because they drill in, they call it category one when the royals die. Category one. Mm. Very dramatic. And I was like, oh my God, it's happening. It's happening. No one tweet. Like, you're not allowed to tweet. You're not allowed to talk. You can't do anything until Hugh Edwards announces it. So everyone is probably just there waiting. But my parents in Wales, my mum was going to a nail salon yesterday, and she was like, oh my God, the woman in front of me has just rushed to the BBC. She's a news reporter. Apparently, it's because the Queen's died now. So she had to miss her nail appointment because the Queen, and that was around 2 o'clock.
Sacrifices will be made.
You can't tweet, and just take it from me, you also cannot go to Ladbrokes. That's all I've said. You can read that however you choose. I'm just saying, when it comes to people of profile passing away, go to a betting shop with some odds being like, I want some of that action.
I tell you what, no, big up those BBC people in the front of the camera there. I mean, they're holding like a serious secret for hours on live television. It's like they're just sitting there going, you know, so we all hope, you know, and hopefully we're gonna hear soon. And it's like, yeah, she's gone, and you know, and you can't tell us because of the legals involved in it all. That must have been a tough gig, man. That's a tough gig.
We all watched it.
Yeah.
It was the same thing for like 5 hours.
Yeah. Great telly. I don't mean that in a nasty way. It's just really compelling. Should we do another question? Something silly? Lady at the back? Oh, we've got another person here. We'll do that.
There are no silly questions, please.
No, everyone. But I like just a silly one.
It's not very silly. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
So, a question for Soren. You swam professionally and intensely for so many years. What would you say, as an adult, the best impact and worst impact of that is or was?
Oh, best impact. I have impeccable time management. Because from the age of 11, I was getting up at 5 in the morning to swim at 6, going to school, and then swimming again at night from 11 to 21. So I'm very good at juggling. Worst impact is, which I've learned recently, actually, is all of the healthy, like the positive mindset I had as an athlete, i.e. constantly powering through, going the extra mile, being the best, isn't actually healthy as a normal person. So like can lead to like, yeah, burnout is a real thing. But yeah, they're probably the two things. I think I'm just working on that second one a little bit.
Amazing.
Thank
great
you.
Great question. Great answer.
We've got one more. The gentleman down here is going to ask our final question.
Oh, thank you. So I think Jaws is a very famous film that has scared many people away from swimming and going near water.
Oh,
is there any film or TV program that is the opposite effect of that you think can actually encourage people to get into the water if they've never tried?
Such a
and
question.
If there isn't, we're going to go and write it.
I also like to add that at a point where I was beginning to heal, Deep Blue Sea came out. And then I was like, nah, not this time. Never again.
Have you seen The Guardian with Ashton Kutcher and Kevin Costner? That's a really, I find that quite an inspiring movie. That's about the US Coast Guard. There's also Sana Lathan was starring in a movie in 2018 called Napoli Ever After, which is about black heron swimming, which I found very fun. A very nice little family film. But there are a few. There's actually, Netflix is dropping a new movie later this year about the Syrian refugee who went on to swim at the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
And that looks fantastic. And I hope that's going to be something that makes people think about actually getting in and just understanding and appreciating swimming as a life-saving skill. Because if that girl wasn't on that boat, you know, her and her sister pushed, you know, they pushed that dinghy to shore. So, yeah.
Well done, audience. You've done some good questions. And thank you, Serene. She's been a great guest.
Please give a round of applause to our amazing guest.
Thank you for having me. Jones.
Serene, before we let you go, could you, for audiences that are interested in the work you're doing, where can I find out more about your charity and the work, positive work that you are doing in these waters?
Yes, you can find us on Instagram, Black Swimming Association, and on Twitter. We also have our own website, which is thebsa.co.uk. So yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you very much. That's the end of a live recording of the episode of Dame Baptiste Questions Everything at the London Podcast Festival. Thank you to our guest, Siren Jones, my producer friend, Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer.
Yeah, hello, thanks.
Cheers. And thank you to this amazing audience at the London Podcast Festival. You guys are great. Thank you very much. Yeah.
You've been listening to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dame Baptiste and myself, Howard Cohen. For more from Dane and myself, make sure you follow us on Instagram at DaneSnapTeast and at The Howard Cohen. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a question for Dane, make sure you send us a DM on Instagram at DBQEPodcast and we could feature you in our next episode. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, question everything.
Insanity Group.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.